The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you on the last show of a fast-moving week. We'll certainly get to the press conference yesterday that went on for nearly 2 hours, counting all the questions following the statements made by Rudy Giuliani and Jenna Ellis and Sidney Powell, the three attorneys, three of the team of attorneys that spoke yesterday in Washington, D.C. to the news media. First, I thought I'd just make one clarification. I got a little bit of feedback from one of our listeners who said that she was talking to one of her friends and told her that Hillary Clinton never did give a concession speech. And then the friend went and found the concession speech that she gave. If I said concession speech several programs ago, I misspoke, but I think what I said is that she never did concede, and that there is a difference. She did give a speech, I remember it, the Wednesday after that election in 2016. She gave a speech, but then since then, we look at the fruits. You see what they've said and done ever since. It's kind of like Barack Obama saying over and again, after the election of Donald Trump in 2016, he said all through that transition, there's going to be a peaceful and smooth transition. There's going to be a peaceful and smooth transition. And as I read to you yesterday from Lee Smith, he said, Obama has already carved out his singular place in U.S. history. He is the first president who interfered in the peaceful transfer of power for 4 years. For 4 years he did it. So they come with smooth-sounding words, for sure. Technically speaking, yes, Hillary Clinton gave a concession speech, but if you listen to that montage that we played, I think, last week, she's included in it. As having said, I think there are lots of questions about his legitimacy, Trump's, that is. And then listen to what she said just last year. This is from May of 2019, clip one.
I think it's also critical to understand that, as I've been telling candidates who have come to see me, you can run the best campaign, you can even become the nominee, and you can have the election stolen from you.
There she is in May of 2019, 3 years on. 3 years on, talking about the election that was stolen from her. Speaking of stolen elections, let's revisit the Stacey Abrams election from 2018. You'll recall that she lost that election. She was running for governor against Governor Kemp. I guess it's Brian Kemp. I forget his first name. In any event, she lost the election by, I think it was 55,000 votes. And then she became a real celebrity in the Democrat Party. She lost. She wouldn't concede. She became a celebrity. And then they made a movie about her. They made a movie about that election and the fact that she wouldn't concede. Here's a few highlights from the trailer, clip two.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stacey Abrams!
When I started running for governor, we anticipated that voter suppression was going to be instrumental in Brian Kemp's campaign. And we were right.
We've been in line for 5 hours.
They said, you've already voted. Looks like several days ago.
No, I would have remembered that.
Thousands of people were told no and didn't have the authority to demand better.
The lines are insane. We have precinct consolidation, non-training of local election officials.
I knew something had gone horribly wrong. The system that is supposed to protect our democracy didn't work the way it was supposed to.
Jim Crow 2.0, that's what we're seeing.
We've got a lot of work to do.
History is never a straight line. It's always a fight.
I will not concede because the erosion of our democracy is not right.
That's a Hollywood movie they made out of the story from 2018. Back then, the media, they celebrated. They still do. They still do. She's on all the talk shows. She's on all the cable news networks. It's an Amazon original. It's played at film festivals. It's created by Academy Award nominated filmmakers. Oh, the celebration of standing up against the system that doesn't work, she said. It just doesn't work. And so for months, years, as it turns out, she hasn't conceded. Listen to this. This is from Guy Benson at Town Hall. He says, conceding, she said, would acknowledge the fundamental fairness of the election. He's speaking of Stacey Abrams. It would acknowledge the fundamental fairness of the election, which she refuses to do. The facts are not on her side, including this one. It says the margin of her loss to Republican Brian Kemp in Georgia from 2018, 54,723 votes, was substantially larger than Joe Biden's leads over Donald Trump in Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin combined. Combined. There's 45,000 votes separating Biden and Trump in those three states combined. She still won't concede over 2018, over 54,000 votes. He says here, if those three states had voted slightly differently, speaking of the recent election, with all else equal, the Electoral College would be deadlocked at 269. Rather than recoiling in horror at her continued refusal to concede a race she lost, Abrams' party and media cheering section has handsomely rewarded her behavior. Democrats elevated her stature by selecting her as their official responder to the subsequent State of the Union address. Donors have showered her organization and various initiatives with mounds of cash. She's been given glossy, glowing treatment in the endless string of magazine covers and fawning interviews. She's been feted by celebrities and turned into a Hollywood film producer. She's been empowered, enriched, and emboldened. Losing an election and refusing to concede it has made her famous and influential. So just lay that alongside what we're seeing in the news cycles today. She's a hero, and of course Trump and everyone associated with him, they're villains. They're villains. For 2 weeks, they've been gathering evidence. And yesterday, the lawyers laid out the case, an overview of the case, saying, this is what we have. Here's what we're now going to present before judges. And of course, it's the same refrain. No evidence, no evidence. CNN tuning it out, tuning it out. They won't even listen. Or if they do, they focus in on just mocking. In the case of Rudy Giuliani, he was sweating. I guess he had some hair dye that was running down the side of his cheek. And so that's the story. That's the story. You weed through some of that, however, and you see that the growing list of witnesses, the pile of evidence, it's increasing, and we'll get to that in just a second. Let's just step back for a moment, though. You heard what they did or how they treated Stacey Abrams following 2018. Same with Hillary Clinton, really. You heard the montage last week. All these Democrats saying that Donald Trump's not legitimate. It wasn't a legitimate election. But now think if the roles were reversed yesterday, and you had Biden. Or just go back even to 2016, and it was Hillary or anyone from the Democrat side contesting the election. And in walk the big-time Democrat lawyers, Cheryl Mills, Loretta Lynch, Ben Crump, and you throw in Michael Avenatti just for good measure. All the big stars from the radical left. And if they would have presented evidence from witnesses about ballot dumps, ballot stuffing, people voting more than once, out-of-state voters, kicking out the poll watchers, dead people voting, computer glitches, and then this computer, or rather this vote counting company that's basically made in Venezuela and used in Venezuela and Argentina and other places, used for fraudulent purposes. What would the headlines be today if that was the scenario from yesterday? You think CNN would have tuned it out? You think the headlines would continue to say no evidence? You think they'd be making fun of one of the lawyers? Joe Pollack at Breitbart, he gave a pretty good summary of the facts and the evidence discussed, saying that Rudy and his team of lawyers came in, they outlined their case, they explained that there's a pattern of alleged irregularities here, they felt like it was planned from a central location, that they took advantage of states, or rather cities within these states, that they knew would be able to get away with it, or so they thought. Here's Fox News has had some troubles these past couple of weeks, but here's Jesse Waters. I think yesterday he did a pretty good job of summarizing the findings or the explanations from yesterday's press conference. Clip four.
Remember, during this whole Russia collusion thing, they had zero eyewitness testimony to say that I saw the Trump campaign collude with Russia. Rudy Giuliani says he has hundreds of sworn affidavits that say they witnessed corruption. So you got to let this play out. What I saw the case to be is this. They're saying, do not certify the fraudulent votes until we present our case in court and then let a judge rule on that. Perfectly normal. The case consists of two pillars. One, these sworn affidavits signed under the penalty of perjury that say they witnessed fraud. And two, circumstantial evidence and whistleblowers. Remember, we used to like whistleblowers and whistleblowers saying that some of the software was manipulated to add Biden votes. That's obviously going to have to be looked into. They're going to need a court order to seize some of those machines and do a forensic analysis, and they're up against the clock on that. But if you do have a pattern here, and that's what he's alleging, there's a conspiracy that's happening in all of these deep blue precincts in the swing states, where after election night, they start inputting fraudulent or invalid Biden votes that needs to be looked into. They have 200 sworn affidavits alone in Wayne County, in Detroit, saying they were backdating ballots that came in after election day. They were allowing double counting.
So there's Jesse Waters doing a pretty good job of summarizing the content from yesterday's press briefing. This is the overview, as Jenna Ellis said. And you compare it, if the roles were reversed, compare it, as he did there, to the Russia collusion investigation that went on for 3 years. And not one, and they had the support of the FBI, all these corrupt, dirty cops, and millions of dollars, and 19 radical left-wing attorneys. And they didn't come up with one eyewitness, one sworn affidavit that said, well, if it wasn't Donald Trump, it was Don Jr., or we caught him over. They did not catch anybody except on these few process crimes. So I think I saw Rudy Giuliani on a show last night following the press conference saying, I'm not sure I've ever gone into a courtroom to argue a case with this many affidavits, this many witnesses. A witness is evidence. If we see someone break into our property here at Edstone and we see them and we identify them and we call the police as a witness, that's evidence. That's evidence of a crime. You would think these reporters are expecting these five lawyers to walk into the room with 25,000 ballots that they were able to seize and then prove were invalid. I guess that's what they're hoping for. They laid it out there, but you see, it's not, and we'll get to the media in just a second, but it's not really about the evidence. They're not up in arms because There's no evidence, and the Trump team keeps going forward with this. They're up in arms because they don't want this to be investigated. They don't want for a judge to issue a court order and say, okay, if there's this many witnesses, let's look at these ballots. Or if there were these glitches and some of them were actually seen, I should say, on the live broadcast, well, then let's look at some of these computers. Let's look at some of the hardware. Now, it's obvious they are, as he said, they're up against the clock. It's an uphill battle. But clearly, the other side is doing everything that it can to run out the clock and to apply this intense pressure on this. It's a shrinking size, those in and around the Trump administration. It's amazing how many people are just abandoning ship, even from the Republican side, saying he should just give in. That we shouldn't even look at the fraud, that we shouldn't even examine it. Okay, those that admit there's a little bit of fraud, I guess that's okay then. We shouldn't even investigate. You shouldn't even take the time to get into court over this. And really, there's more to this. I think it was Mark Levin the other day that said they're trying to shape the narrative. They're trying to make the narrative just so in hopes of influencing the judges. They talk about all these judges that have thrown cases out, and as Rudy explained yesterday, these are cases brought on by private citizens. The ones that the Trump team is bringing forward, those are just now about to begin. They're about to begin, and as Joel Pollack in Breitbart brings out, here are the 9 arguments that they're making. That's what he took away from yesterday's press conference. But here they are, the radical left, demanding, in fact, you got to show me all the evidence. Listen to Greg Jarrett. He's an attorney and also a commentator on Fox. And he had this to say yesterday, clip 7.
Well, the unabashed arrogance of the media was on full display today as they were demanding to see the evidence. They're not entitled to see the evidence. Evidence is presented in a court of law, eyewitnesses, affidavits sworn under penalty of perjury. That's how the legal process goes. So as Giuliani pointed out, he has to go state by state. It takes time. It's taken 2 weeks to gather that evidence. And now he is going about the arduous task of presenting it judge by judge, jurisdiction by jurisdiction. But look, where you have blank ballots that are assigned names, thousands of them, and then filled in with votes, when you have thousands of backdated ballots, when you have ballots that don't match valid voters, when you have ballots that don't match signatures, and importantly, where you have the integrity of voting machines and the critical software called into serious question because there's a backdoor that allows tens of thousands of votes to be transferred from one candidate to another instantaneously with the click of a mouse or the stroke of a keyboard. These need to be looked to at in a court of law. That's how the process works. Of course, the media could be searching for this evidence on their own, but they wouldn't do that because that would jeopardize their coronation of their chosen candidate, Joe Biden, and it would be the responsible journalistic thing to do, and they've proven they won't do it.
They certainly have. He's exactly right. They've proven they will not look into this. They won't. It's just like the Hunter laptop. They will not examine the evidence if it works against the one they've coronated. And so it's left to these few attorneys. And who knows who else? Rudy called out the FBI yesterday. Where are they? Where is the FBI? Well, look at what the FBI was covering up for 4 years, and they still cover it up. And look at the FBI. I don't know if it was FBI or if the USPS, but they send the federal officials to go to that whistleblower in Pennsylvania and to try to pressure him to recant. So there's very little help. You look at the scriptures, 2 Kings 14, God surveyed the scene and he saw that there was no help. Here they are demanding You give us evidence. You prove it. Right here this second. You don't have it, so he should concede. Well, here it is, as it's spelled out in Joel Pollack's piece, the key allegations brought forward by Donald Trump's lawyers. Number one, observers were allegedly prevented from watching mail-in ballots being opened. And some of this is on video. So there's that. And I guess some of this you've heard, well, all of this, for the most part, you've heard if you've been listening to this program. You've heard these things over the last couple of weeks. But it's covered up. It's carefully concealed by the major media. And so here come the attorneys yesterday going around the media to have a live press conference. And even then, of course, the media, in most cases, tune it out. Observers kept out. Number two, allegedly unequal application of the law in Democratic counties. So you had these relaxed voting rules in predominantly Democrat counties, and then it wasn't the same for those over in Republican counties. In the Democrat counties, they were able to come back in and cure the ballots or fix what was wrong with them. Not so, and that's mainly in Pennsylvania, I believe. The third one, voters allegedly arrived at the polls to discover other people had voted for them. It says he alleged that Democrats had filled out absentee ballots for other people, hoping they would not show up. So that's fraudulent. That's cheating. And there's witnesses. Number four, election officials were allegedly told not to look for defects in ballots and to backdate ballots. Giuliani cited an affidavit from an official who swore she was told not to exclude absentee ballots for defects. You just ignore those defects. Never mind the laws. Never mind the statutes. Never mind the election rules. Just ignore it. And he's got witnesses saying they were told to do this. Witnesses swearing under the penalty of perjury. These are things they never had with the Russian collusion hoax. Because it was exactly that, a hoax. Number five, ballots casting votes for Joe Biden and no other candidates were allegedly run several times through machines. Giuliani said that there were 60 witnesses in Michigan who would attest to ballots being produced quickly and counted twice or even three times. There's 60 witnesses that saw this. So, okay, it goes before a judge, and then what happens? Well, we'll see. We will see. Leave aside for a moment that Rudy was sweating. Leave aside for the moment what the press can fixate on as they try to establish the narrative. It's a war over the narrative. They want their false narrative to prevail. They want to influence judges. There won't be time for juries, but they're trying to influence judges. They want judges to just look at it and not even read the brief and to just say, this is crazy. I heard it on CNN. It's just nonsense. It's foolishness. What happens when one judge says, hey, let's examine. Let's actually look at this. These are serious allegations after all. And we've got witnesses, eyewitnesses that observe these things. Number six says absentee ballots were accepted in Wisconsin without being applied for first. And during the press conference, Rudy explained that the laws in Wisconsin are actually very strict. And it's illegal to send out a ballot to someone, an absentee ballot, if they did not request it. It's very clear. So if you have a judge that's willing to abide by the law, what's the separation in Wisconsin? About 10,000 votes? 20,000 votes? Number seven, it says, there were allegedly overvotes, with some precincts allegedly recording more voters than residents, among other problems. This was especially the case in Michigan, in Detroit. This is why the two Republicans on that canvassing board, this is why they refused to certify, because the numbers don't add up. Sam was looking through the precincts from 2016. 490 precincts in Detroit in 2016. And he, just in going through the list, was able to find five precincts with a voter turnout above 50%. A lot of them were down around 25, 30, 40%. Only five were above 50%. This time around, you've got all of these precincts that are above 100% because they have so many ballots. They've got more ballots than they've got voters. Number eight, it says, voting machines and software are allegedly owned by companies with ties to the Venezuelan regime and to left-wing donor George Soros. Sidney Powell argued that U.S. votes were being counted overseas and that Dominion voting machines and Smartmatic software were controlled by foreign interests, manipulating algorithms to change the results. Powell noted specifically that Smartmatic's owners included two Venezuelan nationals whom she alleged had ties to the regime of Hugo Chavez and Nicolas Maduro. The legal team alleged that there were statistical anomalies, such as huge batches of votes for Biden, that could not be explained except as manipulation, which they alleged happened in the wee hours of the morning as vote counting had stalled. Now, he adds the thought here, the companies, that would be Smartmatic and Dominion, have disputed these allegations vigorously. Okay, so there's two sides. There's two sides to every courtroom argument. But why, oh why, wouldn't the press at least be curious enough to look into Lord Malik Brown or these Venezuelans that created the company, Smartmatic? Or the suspicious offices in Toronto, and whether or not they actually are located next to an outfit headed up by George Soros. Why won't they even look into it? Why is it not even considered? Sidney Powell mentioned these servers that had been seized in Frankfurt, Germany, and said, I'm not sure they were seized. I'm not sure if they were seized by the good guys or the bad guys. You would think there'd be a few reporters that would say, wow, I'm going to go look into this story. Instead, they just shut it. They turn it off. CNN just turns off the doesn't even show the press conference. Here's Sidney Powell from yesterday, clip 10.
The software manual itself, you can download it from the internet, and I would encourage you all to read it because it specifically advertises some of these things as features of the system. Why it was ever allowed into this country is beyond my comprehension. And why nobody has dealt with it is absolutely appalling.
We've been using it since the early 2000s. And during that press conference, she read from a letter from Congresswoman Maloney, Carolyn Maloney. She's representing New York. I think she still does. She's a Democrat. And this is a letter she wrote back in 2006 to one of the government departments. I can't remember all the acronyms and what they stand for, but it says here, it is undisputed that Smartmatic is foreign owned and it has acquired Sequoia, one of the three major voting machine companies doing business in the U.S. According to a Sequoia press release in May 2006, Sequoia voting machines were used to record over 125 million votes during the 2004 presidential election in the U.S. As we confront another election, Americans deserve to know that the administration has made sure that any foreign ownership of voting machines poses no national security threat. And this is what Sidney Powell is sounding the alarm over. Look, whether or not it turned over enough votes for Biden or not, this is a national security threat. This is a Venezuelan company. Her letter goes on for a page and a half. She was concerned about it in 2006. I read to you earlier this week. Those three senators, all Democrats, and then one Democratic congressman, all of them, with they were writing about similar concerns last year. And you want to go through just what the media was talking about in the lead up to this year's election. There were plenty of reports talking about Dominion and just the lack of security there and how vulnerable we are. Now, completely silent. Now, it's like what you heard from the DHS. The most secure election in history. And then you raise a question even, and you're shouted down, as they did with Vice President Biden yesterday. Vice President Pence, sorry. Sorry to keep track of all these players. Just shouted down. Just a shameful display. But back to Sidney Powell and her comments at the press briefing. Here's clip 11.
There's no doubt it has been used to alter elections in other countries. We know specifically that Venezuela exported it for that purpose to Argentina and other Latin American companies to make sure that the corrupt rulers who were willing to pay the highest price for being in office were allowed to rig their elections. This is stunning, heartbreaking, infuriating, and the most unpatriotic acts I can even imagine for people in this country to have participated in any way, shape, or form. And I want the American public to know right now that we will not be intimidated. American patriots are fed up with the corruption from the local level to the highest level of our government, and we are going to take this country back. We are not going to be intimidated. We are not going to back down. We are going to clean this mess up now. President Trump won by a landslide. We are going to prove it, and we are going to reclaim the United States of America for the people who vote for freedom.
That's Sidney Powell getting a little bit emotional there with her concluding remarks. She just can't believe that our own government, our own agencies would not look into this seriously, given what she and others are finding out on their own. Sam's done a bit of research himself into SGO and Smartmatic and Dominion and all the connections and all the international players. And as you heard there, all of the votes internationally that have been tampered with. We saw a statement from Smartmatic, I believe it was, about, she referenced the election in Argentina. And Smartmatic, wasn't it Smartmatic that announced that it was the most secure? It was like very similar to what the DHS said last week. Oh, yeah, we did a fantastic job. You're not going to expect them to come out and say, you know, we really fouled this one up. We really made a big botch of it. But where are the media holding their feet to the fire, looking into some of these really suspicious-looking events? Where are they connecting the dots? There you see it, Argentina 2019. Most accurate, fast, and transparent provisional tally in Argentina's history. There's Smartmatic practically breaking their arms, patting themselves on the back. Pretty amazing. Joel Pollack's piece. Here's the last bit of evidence or the allegations. He says, number 9, the Constitution provides a process for electing a president if the vote is corrupted. Jenna Ellis argued that the media had usurped the power to declare the winner of the election. She made the point, citing Federalist number 68, that the constitutional process of selecting a president had procedural safeguards against corruption and foreign influence. She talked about the founders being brilliant and said that they foresaw this sort of thing, that if there was an election that was tampered with, there are constitutional provisions to protect the United States of America. And so there are lots of pathways here. That's what you heard. If you listened to the press conference and you watched it with open eyes. It says, finally, from Pollack's article, Rudy noted that several lawsuits had been dismissed had been filed by private individuals, not the campaign directly. He said lawsuits might be filed in Arizona and that the campaign was also examining irregularities in New Mexico and Virginia. So we will see. Let me just give you one comment from Jenna Ellis, who spoke at the press conference after Rudy Giuliani, clip 8.
For those of you who are here in this room or have maybe tuned out in other networks, clearly you've never been court reporters. Trials take time. Putting on evidence takes time. This is basically an opening statement so the American people can understand what the networks have been hiding and what they refuse to cover, because all of your fake news headlines are dancing around the merits of this case and are trying to delegitimize what we are doing here.
She went on to lecture them. I think that might be a little bit of that might be in the next clip, but she basically said, look, you don't know the first thing about how a trial unfolds. You've obviously never been court reporters. Where's the evidence? Where's the evidence? As they come into the room with 200 and some odd, I think with all of the cases combined, it's something like 1,100 witnesses. The fact that they're accumulating all of this in just 2 weeks' time is in itself miraculous. 2 weeks. 2 weeks' time. And yet, look at what the media narrative has been. Oh, they're losing lawyers. And, you know, the two lawyers they lost in Pennsylvania, that's because of intimidation and death threats. But instead of that being the story that the media run with is that, well, Trump can't even keep his lawyers. He can't even keep his lawyers on his team because they're just running out of steam. Oh, they have no options. All the judges have kicked these cases out of court. They're losing one day after another. And then there's no evidence. What a sham, they say. And meanwhile, the collection of evidence continues. One more clip from Jenna Ellis, clip 9.
This is the court of public opinion right now. We are not trying our case in the court of public opinion, because if we were, we would get unbiased jurors. I would strike 99% of you from the jury, and I would be allowed to because of the fake news coverage you provide. You are not unbiased jurors. And until you step out of your role as a journalist and actually go into a courtroom and you are a judge on a bench that has sworn an oath to be unbiased in our separation of powers, then your opinion does not matter. The facts matter, the truth matters. And if you are fair reporters, you will cover that fairly and appropriately, and you will allow coverage of our media team here and our legal team. That is absolutely shocking that all you cover are around the margins, and I've seen all of you taking pictures right now, and I can anticipate what your headlines are going to be. If you are not willing to talk about the evidence that has been presented, then that is absolutely unacceptable for journalistic standards. This is an opening statement. This is something where we have told you what the evidence will show, and we have given you a brief description. That happens in a courtroom all the time, where that's not the fact-finding process. That is just an overview.
So they'll give the court the same overview they gave to those reporters yesterday, and then the trials will begin. It's important for us to step back here and just better appreciate the fact that this team, the Trump administration, is not only out there exposing widespread, rampant voter fraud, they also continue to expose the fraudulent media as well. Now, that's been going on for years. But they are exposing the media as the frauds that they are. Every single one of them. Well, especially Giuliani and that woman there, Jenna Ellis, just absolutely blasted the media. That was the other side to this press conference. Just right in their face, as well it should have been. Because they have been utterly uninterested in the evidence. They've turned a blind eye to it. Listen to CNN yesterday, as this press conference was just starting. Here's what was happening over at CNN, clip 5.
It has been a bad week for the Trump legal team that actually right now is holding a press conference that is so bananas we can't even bring it to you because it's just so full of BS.
So bananas, you see. We can't even bring any of it to you. It's so crazy. That's CNN. Sounded pretty nice, this woman. I don't know who she was, but yeah, we just can't even bring it to you. That's been the way since election night. Remember, this has been their new approach. Whether it's Donald Trump, one of his representatives, if he comes out to give a press conference, they just tune it out. They break into it. They say it's lies. They say there's no evidence. Just the same approach that they took with the Biden family scandal before the election. Now, over at the White House, this was a press conference that Vice President Pence conducted about coronavirus and the vaccines and so on. And you hear his concluding remarks, and just listen to the reaction of these reporters when he leaves the room and he doesn't take their questions. This is clip 3.
With the extraordinary partnership of federal and state and local health officials, and with God's help, we will get through this, and we will get through this together.
Mr. Vice President,
thank you all.
All of you need to answer this.
Why is the federal
what
government?
What is going on? And you're not working with the Trump opinion. You're all part of not recognizing democracy. You're all undermining the democratic election. Every one of you.
Why is the federal
and you won't work with the transition.
Can you believe this? Just completely unhinged. Just, are these reporters? Are they there to report the news? Or are these radicals? Are these radical activists? Are these deranged radical Democrats? They are there to preach. They are there to tell. You heard one of them say, you and every one of you, undermining democracy, undermining a democratic election. You think about it, if the roles were reversed. Well, I guess you could get an example of that with the reporters that were just so loving and gentle and kind. I mean, they had some good laughs. Vice President Biden together with the reporters when he came out for a statement last evening. And listen to Kristen Welker from MSNBC. Listen to the question that she asked. And never mind the tone, which is totally different than what you just heard. But listen to the question. Clip 6.
You have said that lives could be lost if you don't start getting briefings from the Trump administration. And now here we are, more than 250,000 lives could be lost. Given that, how do you justify not taking legal action to get the briefings that you say are critical, that you say you need?
You can't make this up. That's the media saying you need to take him to court. You need to sue him. You need to file a lawsuit. And then you got the other side saying, here, we've got this mound of evidence, and so we're going to take him to court. How dare you? You're undermining democracy. How dare you? Every one of them shouting down the Vice President of the United States and his administration, just behaving like spoiled children, like little spoiled brats. It's unbelievable. These people are so filled with rage and hatred, they're blinded by it. They can't see anything objectively. Truth. Truth is cast to the ground. This is from Raheem Kassem at the National Post. He says, another day, another unhinged meltdown by news reporters who privately will swear allegiance to the political left, but publicly pretend to be speaking truth to power. In reality, they're speaking lies to you. They are speaking lies. No evidence? Well, we'll see. We'll see. No one's denying that it's an uphill battle and that the clock is running out, as we heard earlier. They don't want it to be investigated. Not one bit of it. And really, just by seeing their reaction to this, It tells you that they fear an investigation. What will they say? How will they react when one judge says, all right, I'm going to give this injunction out and we need to look into this? What, after they've been saying no evidence, they've made their anointing, they've decided it's Biden, how are they going to take that? That'll be comical as well, I'm sure. This author here says, following this evening's White House coronavirus tat, well, he talks about the scene you just saw there in that clip. It says, immediately, the establishment media pivoted. Fox News called it light on facts. It wasn't, and you can watch it for yourself to help decide. He's talking about the press conference with Rudy now, not the one with the vice president. It says, but consider for a moment, and this is the point that I made earlier, consider for a moment what the headlines would be on the chyrons at CNN, Fox, as well as on the front pages of tomorrow's newspapers, if Rudy Giuliani were an attorney for the left. And then he imagines the headlines. Widespread voter fraud. Detailed evidence emerges of fraudulent Biden victory. Those would be the headlines if the roles were reversed. He says, finally, we know this from the level of gravitas such outlets lent to convicted legal fraudsters such as Michael Avenatti over the past 4 years. They also, on repeat and on command, gave Democrats the benefit of the doubt over countless baseless accusations that played out over the partisan impeachment process. So that's from Raheem Kassam at the National Pulse. I'm running out of time, but let me just update you on a couple of things that we went through yesterday that I think these are quite interesting. This DHS directive, we told you about the January 6th directive, 2017, Jay Johnson. This is the outgoing Obama administration. And as Smartmatic wrote on its website, it said on January 6th, 2017, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, designated elections systems as part of the nation's critical infrastructure and created a subsector under the existing government facilities sector. It says since DHS has been taking a leading role and so on. So we went through some of that with you yesterday and asked, okay, what was behind this? We know about the directives the Obama people gave to the intel agencies. Look, you share the information. If you can dig up dirt on Donald Trump, you make sure it's shared all across the intel community. And so here comes the government, the Obama government, saying that we want federal oversight on some of these voting companies. Not the Trump administration, the Obama administration. And really, the more that we've looked into this, the more that you see that this is the federal government meddling and doing so in a way that would make elections more secure. This is the deep state just making sure that elections in the future would be secure, right? And I told you there was some, even in the directive from Jay Johnson, he said, now I know there's a lot of state officials that don't like this. And he even addressed that. One of those state officials happened to be Brian Kemp. He was Secretary of State in Georgia at the time. Currently, he's the governor. He's the one who beat Stacey Abrams. It's interesting to just consider all of these players, as we've done before with respect to the Russia hoax. In any event, Politico, this is what they said at the time. It says, one of the leading critics of the move, by Jay Johnson, that is, Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp. So he was Secretary of State at that time. He said Johnson had blindsided state election officials, adding, this action is a federal overreach into a sphere constitutionally reserved for the states. The feds have no business. They have no business intervening and presiding over how voting is counted and the machines and things that are used. It says here, the new Congress has already been sworn in, and this administration only has 15 days left in its term, Kemp said in a statement to Politico. The responsible course of action is for the new administration to take up this issue and examine it before any decision is made in the 11th hour. This smacks of partisan politics. This smacks. So this was when Brian Kemp was very much against this directive by Jay Johnson, which we still want to study in more. This is from the Christian Science Monitor. It says, on August 23rd, Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp said, the question remains whether the federal government will subvert the Constitution to achieve the goal of federalizing elections under the guise of security. It says, in my opinion, designating voting systems or any other election system as critical infrastructure would be a vast federal overreach, the cost of which would not equally improve the security of elections in the United States. There he was, sounding the alarm. And then what was it? A couple years later, he agrees to a $107 million deal with Dominion to put these machines and the Smartmatic software all throughout Georgia. And you hear about some of these leaders, we don't know for sure, but you hear about some of them being compromised, some of them being or receiving perks, not unlike what the Biden family is accustomed to, whether it's Ukraine or China or Russia. It is possible that there's some foul play. I'm not the investigative reporter. You would think there would be a few, though, that would say, what is going on? What is going on? I told you the other day about this DHS guy, the one that came out with the statement and said, most secure election in history. And then President Trump ended up firing him just a few days ago. This and we've also talked to you before about the Axios and the New York Times sort of preparing the U.S. Public, the Americans leading up to the election, the American public, preparing them with the, okay, there's going to be a red wave on election night. Then after that, we can't announce the results. It's going to take several days. The mail-in ballots will come in, and then Biden will come along and win. At the end. And as I said in one of the previous programs, well, they were basically getting the message out so that they were priming the American public, priming them for just a completely new and radically different way to go about a U.S. election. And so then they get to election night and you have all these unprecedented things happening and nobody's shocked by it. That Axios story came out in, I believe it was early September. Then the New York Times followed on right after that. And if you go back before that, Sam found this yesterday. This is a report on mail-in voting in 2020, and it's put out by the Department of Homeland Security's Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. This is the guy that Chris Krebs headed up, or this is the department that he headed up, the one that came out with the statement, most secure in history, and then President Trump fired him. Look at what was in this report. This is July 28th of this year, and they said this. It says, disinformation and malinformation risk to mail-in voting infrastructure and processes are similar to that of in-person voting while utilizing different content. It says mail-in voting has already become an issue among partisan political voices, which makes it a target for threat actors to exploit in terms of pushing. So who are the threat actors? It says these threat actors may mislead and confuse the public about the mechanics of mail-in voting and leverage limited understanding regarding mail-in voting processes. It says in order to cause chaos and provoke distrust in the election administration and electoral results. For example, processing mail-in ballots can take a longer period of time, when jurisdictions are not able to begin processing them until Election Day or after the polls close. This will cause delays in getting results out to the public. Threat actors, the bad guys, threat actors may exploit a delay in results to sow discord, manipulate public discourse, and discredit the electoral system, all to undermine the U.S. democratic system. So we really piled it on to Axios in the New York Times. Here it is coming from the DHS even before that. And it's coming from this same guy that President Trump just fired because 9 days after the election, he says, nothing to look at here. Everything is completely secure. No problems whatsoever. Now, there's another connection. As we connect the dots, you look into this man, his involvement, just the DHS, and just the fact that whether it's Smartmatic or Dominion, you've got all of these cooperating partners with the U.S. government, with these agencies, DHS and this cybersecurity force. They were the ones preparing the media, who then prepared the American public for everything that we've seen. And the threat actor, let's be honest, the threat actor is the Trump administration. Because that's what the media have been going on and on about. Listen to the way they treated Mike Pence yesterday. They all are in on it. All of them. And it's getting exposed. Well, that's about all that I have time for, unfortunately. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email us, send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, for joining us all week, and we'll see you Monday.